You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
I told you.
Yeah, you were right on. One of my favorites.
It is another Thursday night. We're here in Studio 2 at LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in the studio tonight with, holy crap, we're all here. How cool is that? I mean, we have Bob Brill, we've got Russ Avison, Jerry Christina, me, and Bobby Jean Bell on the phone. Bobby, you still with us?
I am. I hope you get a photo of all of you together.
Would
you
no,
please
we don't do
get one picture of all of you together?
We don't do pictures. You know that.
I haven't shaved in a week. Do you still want me to do it?
Yes.
Yeah, he's you know, I'm not going to go there.
I shaved after we filmed the movie. I did, because I grew it all out, and then I just haven't shaved since.
It looks nice, but he's not wearing any pants.
Well, yeah. That's the problem here, you know.
Well, it's radio.
The big news is tonight that we lost our sponsor for the Writer's Block.
No way.
So, yeah, we did. And I kind of figured it was coming, so...
I'm sorry.
Is that why we're drinking?
Yeah, we're drinking because I asked Bob to bring in the almond tequila.
I thought he was going to bring a bottle. I didn't think he was going to bring 2 ounces, and I just drank one and a half.
Drank half the flask. You're not driving.
Who makes it? This is really good.
It is really good stuff.
It's a tequila factory in Puerto Vallarta. Uh-huh. And if you go on one of the the Carnival cruise ships, it's on one of the excursions that you can buy. Uh-huh. And we went there a few years ago. And part of the excursion takes you to the tequila factory, and then, of course, they take you into, try to sell you some tequila. They have, coffee tequila and about 4 or 5 other brands. And I love almond. So we bought a bottle of almond, and we got home, and it was like, oh, my gosh, this stuff is good. My wife was even – I had it in everything from iced tea to Coke, you know, or straight. And so I contacted their website, and they said they could deliver it to Tijuana, but they couldn't deliver it to the U.S.
Oh.
So the last time my wife took her kids down to on a cruise, just was about a couple months ago, I made arrangements, and they brought a case to the ship. They wow. brought it to the ship, and we bought the case, and she brought it home, because you're allowed X amount of bottles and that kind of stuff, and it was great. So we've gone through a third of it already.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. Well, I really love really that amaretto.
This is what he brought to the Cowboy Festival on Sunday morning, just before we got the Johnny Boggs Stephen King story.
And Bobby's missing it again.
And Bobby's missing it again.
The last time.
I know. I have to live vicariously.
Well, you know what? I'm sure there's something in your Writer's Block coffee mug, so I'm not gonna feel
you
real
get
bad.
Turkish delight, because I forgot to bring some. So
anyway, I'm looking for it.
Anyway, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And we are geared strictly for new writers. And if you're a new writer and you've just put the last period on your story or your book and you finished the last paragraph and you've got all those pages sitting there staring at you in the face, what do you do with them? Well, Bob Brill knows what you do with them. I know what you do with them. Russ is clueless.
You hit the nail on it.
I know. And it's... you know, send it over to us. We'll take a look at your manuscript, and chances are, if it's a viable manuscript, we'll work with you, and we'll tell you if you need to work on it to get it better, and we'll help you with that too. And we can help you format and proofread and edit and the whole nine yards. Get it in a book and get it on a cover and get it on your table, or as we all do, as Bob will attest, we give them away.
Many of them.
So.
Well, we go to places.
I know we have Amber's next door tonight, just hooping and hollering. Anyway, if you're interested, the number and you can call is 805-795-3165, or you can write to J. Christina at TuscanyBayBooks.com, or Richard Paolinelli, Paolinelli at TuscanyBayBooks.com. Okay, Out West Shop is your online source for top brands. that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. And Bobby Jean did not send me a new ad today. Here we go.
Because this one's so good.
I know. Shop for unique and distinctive. It's my delivery. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com or www.scvoutwest.com. Enter code WB100 and receive $10 off your order. Or you can call them toll-free at 877-340-9378. And Bobby Jean is, of course, the proprietor of Out West, and she and her husband, Jim. All right. We don't have to hang up on anybody tonight because we got him.
Well, we could.
We got him sitting right here in the studio. And we're drinking tequila and having life. We're loving life. Like, having life, whatever. Anyway, Mr. Bob Brill, he is like this total dude that's on the radio in L.A., been on the radio since, oh, I don't know. You were like fairly young when you first went on the air.
Bob was 18.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and he's been on
19, 22.
Well, I'm just leaving it to the 72.
Yeah. That's when I started. Prescott, Arizona.
Yeah. And here you still are.
Yeah, fortunately, the gods have been good to me, the good Lord, and I've been able to keep my voice somewhere over the last almost 50 years.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm still working.
No, so over 50 years.
Okay.
No. 49.
It's getting close. It's in there somewhere. Yeah. I try not to. Yeah. I just had a birthday, so I try not to.
But Bob is actually one of the talking heads on KNX Radio. And he does weekends primarily, don't you?
No, I'm back to doing a couple nights a week. I do weekends, yeah. And I'm doing a couple overnights.
Okay.
Now. Yeah, so.
And I used to listen to KNX. I used to listen to Bob's show. So, not bad.
Not bad.
He's not bad.
Not bad to hang in there for almost 50 years.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I always knew that I took a break for a little while, but I was still doing other stuff in the business and stuff like that, some commercials and things like that, and owned a baseball card store at that time. And I kind of always thought, well, yeah, I want to really get back in. And, you know, I just, things happened that I got back in, and I've been back in about 12 years now for doing what I'm doing, and I'm enjoying it. You know, it's like I'm not breaking rocks or anything like that, so it's or lifting big bales of hay or anything. So it's been good, and the money's decent. So.
How long were you out of it before you came back?
Well, I wasn't really out of it technically, but I did own a baseball card store where I was doing kind of that and radio for UPI and a few other things for about 12 years.
Well, you were the chief national correspondent for UPI.
Yeah, I was a LA-based bureau chief after I was a national correspondent and doing both at the same time later on. And so I covered, my territory was up and down from the east coast or the east border of Texas up and down the globe west through Asia. That was our territory out of LA.
That's a lot of travel.
There was two of us when we first started. My former colleague who just passed away about a month ago, Bob Fuss, who went on to become a CBS congressional correspondent, covered Congress. And I stayed at UPI and then worked around some other radio stations, freelance for a while. Met Roy Rogers when I was covering some radio stuff, which was kind of cool. And did a lot of different things, and I wrote, and then I had the Brill Report, which was a fax newsletter, very successful, you know, selling that. And then, like I said, doing the baseball card thing, which I really enjoy, and I still write a weekly blog called Baseball in the 1960s.
Right.
And I write a blog called Lancer Hero of the West. And I write one called Interesting People with Bob Brill, which is for my podcast, which is, as the title says, it's interviews with some really interesting people with interesting jobs. So it's a lot of fun.
There you go.
Wow.
And he's written 8 books, 18 screenplays, 2 pilots, mm-hmm. 3 blogs, a podcast, a fax newsletter. Holy shit.
4 short films now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We just shot the fourth one, so.
And you did a turn as a DJ.
Yeah, for starting out, yeah.
And in 2022, you're going to get some sleep.
Yeah.
And actually, Bob is our third co-host here. on the writer's block when Bobby Jean left. We brought, of course, brought in Richard Palinelli, and he moved to Omaha.
Yeah, what is the deal? You keep driving all these people out of town.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still a co-host.
Yeah. We're not talking about you right now.
the wide world of the internet.
We know, Bobby. We still love you. But Bob graciously, or not offered, but acquiesced to come in and fill in the shoes at the seat on Thursday nights. And
it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it very much. Yeah. I'm glad.
Besides that, you get to read stuff.
Yeah, you know, and that's always a bonus.
There you go. So we're here tonight. We're gathered here tonight to talk about Lancer, Hero of the West.
Oh yeah, thank you.
And it started out with the Los Angeles affair.
No, Prescott.
Prescott. Okay.
Prescott was number one.
Okay, and then, but we have Los Angeles, Santa Fe, El Paso, and all kinds of them.
The next one will be New Orleans.
And New Orleans?
New Orleans will be the next one. Yeah.
Okay. And, that's the three that you send us. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I read Santa Fe. I'm right in the middle of L.A.
And did you like Santa Fe?
I did.
It was a little different.
It was, yeah. But and writing westerns is something I know a little bit about.
Right.
So I mean, you know, I don't look at it with a jaundiced eye. Just not even a critical eye. I just, you know, everybody writes different styles.
Well, you know, I just want people to enjoy them more than anything else.
Well, they read fast,
yeah. And that was they're by design.
Yeah, they do read fast,
but they're fun. They're fun.
Yeah,
I've only read the one Hero of the West.
El Paso Affair.
Right.
The latest one just came out. Yeah.
And I will tell you that was one thing that struck me is that it read fast, but how quickly it pulled me in. And I think I read half the book in my first sitting, and then I read up until the big gunfight that was coming up.
Right.
Okay. And then I had to put it down, and I wasn't going to read the rest till the next day. And I found my brain going, okay, so what are they going to do? What's going to happen? So it was, and then
yes. Thank
and
you.
And without, because I don't want to give anything away, but the last few pages, how you wrap things up, I felt really sad. I really did. And I thought, boy, the West was really brutal.
Well, yeah.
Well, I think two things when I first decided I wanted to write Lancer and the format that I wanted to write it in, as I've told Jim before, I wanted it to be, I designed it to be a book that you could pick up at the airport. In L.A. or New York, and fly to New York or Los Angeles the other way and read it in one sitting.
Yeah.
And so they're all right around 200 pages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I've been thinking about this for a while. People ask me about that particular style of writing. And I'm a news writer. I've been doing news for almost 50 years. Yeah. And when you do radio news, everything has to be brief and, you know. And I brought this up last week. We were talking to one of the writers who writes a lot of flowery, you know, because a lot of writers write a lot of flowery description. It's like if you take a Coen Brothers feature film script, it's like the writer rides in on his horse. If you take a James Cameron feature film script, it's the dark-haired writer wearing brass buttons on his glowing shirt on a Palomino, rides past three, you know, and it's like you have all this description. And as in when you write radio news, you can't do that.
Right.
And, you know, you leave it for the magazines and the newspapers. And, of course, TV has something to show.
Right.
So that's when I chose to do this, I realized my writing, my training is always going to be there for that. And that's so it's brief. It's I don't get into a lot of descriptions. Sometimes I do because I feel like, you know, it's like, OK, I really need to get into this descriptive stuff, you know, and be more poetic. And and I go off on a little tangent. Then I bring it back.
So. But one description you don't get into at all is Lancer.
That's right. And again, that's by
if you notice that you never, you don't really know what the man looks like, and that is
look at the picture on the book. It's a dark, shadowy guy.
Yeah, and that's the first one I finally broke down and put bodies on the cover.
Oh,
my original thought was, and allude to what Jim was talking about, is I never want to describe what Lancer looks like because I always felt as a reader, I have an idea as I'm reading in my mind. I'm developing what that character looks like.
Yeah.
Right.
And that character may be different from what you develop.
Sure. Well, if I can jump in as a reader, I think that is one of the wonderful things about him we do get some ideas about him through the people he interacts with, especially right. the women who will kind of talk a little bit about yes. What they see or feel when they're sharing the space with him. I think that it is kind of cool to leave him a bit of a man of mystery so we can determine that. I also think there are times that, yes, you are very much kind of to the point and not real descriptive, but there are many moments, especially when he's presenting a delight like a Turkish delight, that you do allow a little more description. So we really are right there as he shares it, pulls it out of a box, presents it to the woman, most likely, but sometimes a man, how she interacts with it.
I think there's something in that Turkish delight.
You give us a lot more description there. So I think it's a wonderful blending of when you move it along really fast and when you tarry just a bit.
My major contribution to the character of Lancer, Hero of the West, is his sweet tooth.
that's and his flight. Philosophies.
Yes, that too.
Well, it's funny because, I when I started reading Lancer, and I've known Bob a number of years now, and I've always seen his books, and I just, I probably should read one of those. And, of course, here he is, and we got a whole box of them show up at the house. I mean, I've got to read them now.
Yeah.
And but first thing I thought, Man in Black, I thought, oh, Paladin.
Oh, yeah.
See, that was my very first... My very first idea of what
I get
he looked
that a lot,
like.
By the way.
well, the Man in Black with the signature holster. Right. Only his is Lancer's, not a Paladin. But that's who I. And there's no other name other than Lancer. Now I don't know if you ever mentioned what his real name is.
Not yet.
So we're going to go there.
Book 10.
Oh my God. And you're what? On book 6 now?
I'm on book 5. Book 5. My goal is to write one a year and to end it after 10 books.
Yeah.
And that'll give me a good series and somebody wanted to pick up a series and they wanted to read other books, or if they're, you want to do a TV series or something. That's my goal. So I'm going to go to 10. I already know how it ends, and I know some of the things I'm going to reveal at that time. And so that's kind of, you got to kind of wait another few years.
Okay, I just have one bit of advice for you.
Yes.
Watch out for the Russian.
Yeah.
That's the L.A. guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really good. I read two of the books, and I am eager to get into the Santa Fe affair. But
I'll tell you, Bobby.
Los Angeles affair was wonderful, it was very complicated. I had to really pay attention to what I was reading, or I was kind of would get it's just a little bit more, there's a little bit more going on than in the first book.
Yeah. Well, the Santa Fe affair, it's like I was just dealing right along with it. I was waiting for this big gunfight that never happened. But he gave this widow Turkish delight. And then he gave her Lancer delight.
By the way, I think that your news writing... past also carries over into the intimate scenes as well. They seem to happen pretty quickly, and there's not a whole lot of detail.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it.
That's probably how he is in real life.
That's what I was thinking,
Not you, but Lancer.
I got to throw a word in there, only because I wrote a book that I have not published. It was my first novel, and it's called The Tattoo Murder. And it's set in Ventura, about a surfing detective, and it was set to be a series. And I wanted to write a lot of that, and I wrote a lot of sex in it. The big mistake was I gave it to my daughter to read.
Oh, gosh.
I said, I want you, she's an adult, okay? And I said, I want you to read it, just give me some feedback. And she got about 5 pages in, I guess, before she slapped me over the head with a book. I said, okay. And it's still waiting to be finally edited, and at some point I'm going to release it. Because I've had a lot of people ask me to release it, including a couple of psychologists who read it. One psychiatrist is a fan of mine who read it. And she says, Bob, you got to release this. And I said, well, let me get the Lancer series series done, and maybe in a few years I will. But thank you on the comment on that, because that's where I kind of wanted to keep Lancer.
Sure.
You know, and I wanted to make it so that Jerry would feel comfortable reading it, and my daughter would feel comfortable reading it, and my grandsons would be feel comfortable reading it.
Sure.
And so, because I love the West, I really do, and your allusion to Paladin, when I created Lancer, when I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go with it, I am a big fan of the 50s and 60s TV westerns, and especially the late 50s and early 60s. And I decided I was going to pull my favorite pieces out of all these guys and then create my own part of that character and go there. And which is, I think I was hopefully successful in coming up with that. Because there's a little Josh Randall in there, there's a little Paladin, there's a little Johnny Yuma,
Virginian,
the Virginian, yeah, you know, and
Robin Hood,
and yes, Robin Hood.
For sure, Robin Hood.
Well, you know, it's funny because I actually got the idea. I used to go to the gym every morning. I don't go quite as much as I used to, and I would spend a half hour on the treadmill, and that's where I do a lot of my thinking, as well as in the car and creating and stuff. And I would watch a lot of. Because I had to be on the treadmill for a half hour, so I would watch a lot of, you know, old TV westerns on YouTube, you know, while I was there, just to pass the time, make the time go faster. They're all about 26, 28 minutes.
Right.
And so as I was doing this, I grew up with those, and of course my dad was a huge Western fan, and if there was a John Wayne movie, I think we were there. I mean, it just happened, and of course everything on TV, and we used to watch a lot of that together. And at some point, I decided, okay, I'm going to tackle a Western. Whether it's a script or a book, I'm going to tackle a Western. And I resisted for a number of years. I really did, because I feared the research, and I love research. I love it, but I feared it because, you know, first of all, there's so many people out there that know so much more about the details than I do, you for one. And then I decided, okay, forget it. I'm going to do it. And I did it, and that's kind of where I kind of moved that along and decided that I liked it and was going to make it into a series of books.
So. Well, I like his horse.
Lincoln.
Lincoln, yeah. Hey, by the way, in this book, Rosa's Cantina.
Yes.
Okay, and then
El Paso.
He made it to Rosa's back door, yes, before he died. It sounds like similar to a song that I've heard before.
Oh, Felita. Yeah. Felita found
it. Yes, exactly.
I did not name her Felina.
No, you didn't, and I thought about that, too.
I had a conversation with Marty Robbins' son. Mm-hmm. And this book I dedicated to Marty Robbins. And when we talked, because we were talking about the feature film that I wrote, which is a mashup of a feature script that I wrote, is a mashup of two Marty Robbins songs, and then the short, which we just filmed at Roy Rogers Ranch last Monday, which is also based on a Marty Robbins song. And I wanted to spend some time with him and tell him how much I loved his dad and all that kind of stuff. And we talked, and I said, this one's in El Paso, but I don't want you to think that is, you know, it's anywhere based on your dad's book. I didn't plagiarize anything. I said, but I did have Rosa's Cantina. He goes, that's okay. We wouldn't give any problems. But Rosa's Cantina might, because they actually exist.
But it was just, there were just a few little things you dropped in there that, mm-hmm, tied right to the song.
Yeah.
So, and I knew there was something that you had in mind when you,
right,
did that.
Right. And you're, mm-hmm, right. And a lot of people, you know, so many people identify. I mean, Marty Robbins was a great balladeer.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, just,
absolutely.
You know, and this feature script that I wrote is a mashup of Master's Call and Big Iron, and it's called Iron Gun. And we just filmed another one. The short is based on the Ballad of Bill Thaxton, which is Sundown. And we filmed that just, like I said, a week ago. It's a short film that we're going to use to promote the feature film and try to do a crowdfund. And I've got some meetings coming up, and there are some people that are interested in it. So as a matter of fact, I just started editing today. So I was looking at Eric. And Al, our we all know Eric and Al, who are Western writers and actors who are in the film. So,
oh, that's cool. Well, as you know, I'm very involved in Western music, and you can't hardly speak with a Western musician who won't give a nod or more to the impact of Marty Robbins. In themselves as listeners and as lovers of Western music. He's just hugely influential today still in the Western music genre.
Mm-hmm.
Had a big impact on me, that's for sure. You
know? I think guys that are in our age group.
Mm-hmm. Baby Boomer?
He had a big impact on all of us because, I mean, his music was so prevalent in the 50s and early 60s. It was just like, up into the early 70s.
Yeah, and it was in that time when we were watching all those Westerns.
Exactly.
Of course, you know, and the funny thing is, I got to tell you this, Jim. You know, I've been looking around at other Westerns because I've gone through the Dale Robertson, Wells Fargo, and which is unbelievable.
I know.
Wells Fargo must have spent $1 billion back in that because all I do is talk about Wells Fargo and how great it was. But aside from that, I have found half-hour series that I didn't know existed in the 50s. And I had forgotten that Henry Fonda was the sheriff and the deputy, you know, which was a TV series.
He was a marshal.
And there's another one. I just saw some pilots that didn't make it. I forgot about Kit Carson, you know, with his Bill Williams. And it was like, I found something I'd never seen before. And I was like, oh, my gosh, these existed. They were great. And they're all filmed at what became Corganville.
Right. There was Buffalo Bill Jr.
Yep.
Red Rider. Mm-hmm. Lash LaRue.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm dating myself now.
No, well, you haven't dated yourself since you dated.
I mean, there was tons of Westerns on in the 50s.
Yeah.
And most of them were filmed at Corganville.
Yeah.
The Texan.
I forgot about the Texan.
Rory Calhoun. Yeah. Great show, actually. Was right up there with Pallet, Have Gun Will Travel, as far as good scripting goes.
Yeah. I think that those shows influenced a lot of us, and hopefully we've passed that on. And through the internet, where you can still go back and see them, mm-hmm. there's a lot of young Western writers who, I mean, people like Eric, for instance, was born in 1975, so he didn't see those, you know, when they were, but he could see them on the web, you know, or on other, you know, like Western channels and things like that.
Yeah.
I just enjoy them so much, and they're so corny. You know, and they're so the stories are good, but and they're mostly, if they say they're true from the, you know, stories of the century. It's
Jim Davis.
Yeah, and it's from the official newspaper files.
Right.
And it's like I looked these up to find out what the real story. That's not what happened.
Yeah,
you know? Johnny Ringo didn't die in the desert.
No. No, underneath an oak tree.
Mm-hmm, without his boots on.
And his boots on backwards. And I don't know. What was it? Something was backwards. His gun belt or something was backwards.
I thought it was his boots.
They were on the wrong feet.
How does that work?
He didn't kill himself.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, it's one of those mysteries, really.
Yeah. So he was buried right there where they found him. He's still there, as far as I know.
It was really Doc Holliday who just said, you know,
I'll be your Huckleberry.
I think it was D.B. Cooper who.
Yeah.
Well, he's not dead, you know.
No, he's still. I think they found him living in San Diego or something.
Well, I'll tell you, we don't really have a lot of heroes today. And this gentleman that you have written, I think he's the guy that most men would like to probably be, and most women would enjoy having a relationship with him.
Oh, sure. After the Turkish delight.
Yeah.
Thank you, because, you know.
And the Omen tequila. Yeah.
Well, you know, people ask me about him, and I describe him as a good guy gunslinger who respects women and kids and things like that. And then I kind of don't know how the rest to describe him without getting into it. But that's sort of the log line, I guess. And that's kind of the image that I wanted to have out there is just what you just described.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a couple seconds here. We're going to do one of Russ's commercials.
Uh-oh.
And he owes me some commercials, too. Of course,
I think I do.
He has yet to give them to me, but we'll just go ahead and do his anyway. Here we go. You're leaving on vacation. Tickets have been purchased. Hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended, but oh, crap. What about the dog? All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside amongst orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be, well, your dog gets to be a dog. Much like the Belzer. All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home with that smile on his face, we'll leave you wondering whose vacation was better, the dog's. All dogs rule, and that's in Fillmore, California. And we are back. It is 7:29. We're here with Bob Brill and Russ Avison, Jerry Christina, myself, and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell on the phone. And if you want to call and talk to Bob tonight, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. And, again, that number is 818-602-4929. It may not answer the phone, but at least, you know, here's the opportunity.
It'll wake us up.
Here's the opportunity. Yes. To talk to this fascinating gentleman sitting across from me that supplied us with our almond tequila tonight.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys like it.
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
It's good.
Yeah,
Bob, I got
really
a question.
Liked it.
Jerry slammed down two shots.
Yeah. Jerry finished off the flask.
She almost grabbed mine, and I said, no, no.
I was hoping he wasn't going to like it.
Hey, I want to ask you, when you have a reoccurring character or a protagonist that goes through all of your books, but somebody's going to pick up one book, like I did with this one, and right. I didn't know anything about Lancer.
Right.
So how difficult is it to rebuild this character in each book so that somebody can come in and read it fresh and it can stand on its own?
The key to that for me is the fact that I always start in Tombstone because he works out of Tombstone. His, mm-hmm. his office, so to speak, or you know, his room at the hotel is in Tombstone. So I always kind of start it that he mixes with his friends who are Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday, and you know, I wanted to make it so that he interacts with legendary real life people. Mm-hmm. You know, because and you know, it's fiction. So I mean, you can make up stuff up about these guys, and nobody's really going to challenge it. If they do, who cares?
Right.
You know. So I'm in Santa Fe, he's in New Mexico, and he runs across Billy the Kid.
Right.
And so it's not really that hard because I try to make every story a standalone. But that if you read every book, each book I reveal something more or something new about Lancer's past. So in the first book, and you don't have to read them in order, but if you do read them in order, you pick that up a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So if you read Prescott Affair, and the reason I said it in Prescott, that was where I got my first radio job. So I was really familiar with it, and it's a Western town and the home of Bucky O'Neill, and it's just a great, great place and a great Western place. And so I was really familiar with it, and when I said, you know, I'm going to start there. And plus, I found out that Virgil Earp used to be a lawman there. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, I was able to work that in, you know.
City Marshal there.
And, yeah, and I was able to work that stuff in so he could actually interact with Earp on the story. And so basically, to answer your question, they're all set to be standalones, but it doesn't really take very much to rebuild the character. And I try not to spend too much time rebuilding the character because if you read the other ones and you're progressing to the next one, you don't want to spend too much time doing it.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
I just give you enough to lay the groundwork. And hopefully you like it and you go back and read the others.
And, of course, that's too where the reader's imagination takes over mm-hmm. and kind of fills in the gaps wherever they
right.
might happen to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Correcto.
Okay.
Well done, Russ.
Thank you.
Sure.
Am I ready to read now? Or write? Right?
Well, that's up to you. I've been hammering on you for years now.
I know.
But I did catch something you did, Bob.
Yeah.
In the Santa Fe Affair.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that Virgil Earp was the sheriff of Tombstone, and John Behan was the marshal.
I got him back. There are things on occasion, and you would have picked that up.
Well,
but like you said, when you're challenged on it, it's fiction. Who cares?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
It was, they had a contest.
Didn't change the story.
Sheriff for the day.
Did not. Yeah. However, Peter Sciarico will be making phone calls
yes,
to you.
Yes, yeah.
I guarantee you.
Well, that just tells Bob that the reader is reading very carefully, and I think if you let him know, you probably get the next book free.
Yeah. I'll do it. Yeah, there we go.
Nice job, Bobby Jean. You're back on my Christmas list.
Well, you know, it's funny that like some people who are really, say, Western aficionados mm-hmm. that will read one of your books and they say, wait a minute, this something's wrong here and the timeline doesn't say, and they'll get on you about that.
Oh yeah.
And I'm thinking these are the same people who go and watch Star Wars and then they go, well, wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
You have to buy into the story when you're reading it or when you're watching it and take it for what it is.
Right.
And that's, you know, when you write fiction, that's a whole big part. You try to be as accurate on a timeline as you can. Like, I researched, like, in El Paso, the sheriff or marshal of El Paso. I'm going to make sure.
Dallas Studenmar.
Yeah, Dallas Studenmar. I wanted to make sure that he was alive during that particular time. So, and you know, with the internet and Google and everything, and so many sources and pictures, you know, and it's become so much easier to do that kind of research,
right,
and to make sure, you know, it doesn't take very long to do. You call it up and then you double check it with another source, you know, and make sure you're right. And when you're bringing in those real life characters, and the rest is, you know, is a story that I want to tell. You know, like in this one, he meets a rabbi on the road.
Right.
You know, and...
And all of the... By the way, he also offers him the Turkish delight.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he
wait a minute.
Everybody.
I thought he was straight.
Not the Lancer delight.
It's his calling card.
Yeah.
Those damn rabbis.
Well, you know, and Bobby had mentioned earlier about the fact that I put the L.A. affair, a lot of it took place in the Santa Clarita area,
right,
which is where the Cowboy Festival is.
Right.
And I grew up in that area. I grew up in San Fernando and Sylmar when we moved out from Pittsburgh. And so I was really familiar with the history of that area. And but I didn't want to get too deep into it, but I wanted to place it there. Mm-hmm. Which also, to be very honest with you, I knew I was coming up to the Cowboy Festival, and that was going to be a good selling point. people were going to be coming out, and if I could tell them the book took place in the local area, it might encourage them to buy a book. And actually, I had some sales because of that. That was good.
All right.
That was good. So
now, Bob, since you plan to do 10 books, mm-hmm, will Tombstone be his center of operation, his home base over all those books? Because
yes,
we know the Earps, you know, they're not there for a very, right, very long time.
Right.
So is that where we will sort of suspend our timeline, or will they vacate Tombstone at some point, but he will always have that be a home base?
It'll always be his home base. And if you notice, I never really put the dates.
I know you don't.
There. And that is done for a specific reason. I don't want to force myself to go out of a time period. I want to make it so, to be very honest, if you read these 10 books, it could be over a year. It could be during the same year. So maybe one these incidents happen once a month, although they don't. But you could imagine it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to box myself in, especially when you're planning something 10 years down the road. You start boxing yourself in, then you're really screwed. You know?
Yeah, I was surprised that you actually made a reference to Custer and the battle, mm-hmm, because that puts a year at least in reference to that conversation.
Right. And I mainly he's in the 1880s.
Well, he actually called Custer an idiot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that was an interesting conversation. I actually happened to be reading that passage on the anniversary of the battle. It kind of made the hair on my arms a little bit.
But Bobby Jean, who wrote the definitive book on the battle of Custer? On the 7th Cavalry, I did.
Well, I think that would be Jim Christina. That was a really good book. It was called Bugles in the Sun. I think I don't know if it's still in print, but here at Out West.
I don't think it is, but I can get you a copy.
You know, I tried in every book to have him either interact or reference. And there's a reason for that, because in the last book, when you really find out the definitive Lancer, who he really is and where it all comes from, that all ties together. And so you notice Lancer travels a lot. He's traveled the world. And and I've traveled the world. I've been to 27 countries, and I love travel, and I wanted to incorporate that into his character. Most of it happened when he was a boy, but not all of it. And so there are certain things. And when the 10th book is written, and you find out who he's related to and all that kind of stuff and where he comes from, I think, since I've never told anybody, and I won't, it will be a total surprise, and I think everybody who follows the book series will be really pleased with it. I really do. Yeah.
Do any of your family members know the answer to that?
No.
Who he really is? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. It's already
so if we're going to torture somebody, it's going to be you.
It's got to be me.
Well, I figure that he's probably got the ending coming after the last bottle of rum and tequila.
So, Bob, when we've chatted with other, authors about
the
concept or coming up with a series, and sometimes we've heard people say, well, I have my general idea or my outline, but I kind of let the characters, eventually they take over. In this, it sounds like did you already know your whole backstory for him before pen went to paper for book one, or has it been revealing itself to you as you've been writing the series?
Most of it I did, except for the fine details. Some of the details that I let out, some of them have developed over the course of the first four books. But basically, I had the pretty much laid out, because originally I was going to write the character who will be the eventual reveal of who Lancer is, and I chose not to. I decided to go a different way, because there were certain things that in the TV westerns and everything which we talked about that have some formulaic things to them, and I wanted to lay those out in these books and tell a consistent story where I could, develop the character as well. And, of course, the character is going to get a little older, not a lot older, but I don't want him to get old, out of his realm. And some of it, I would say the fine details are what is coming out, and I release a little bit more of it. Sometimes I'm sitting here thinking, I'll think, oh, my gosh, I do have to reveal something here. And... oh, wait a second. That's a good idea. I'll reveal this, and that goes right along with my eventual revelation of the final character. So, but they all kind of flow together, which I've kind of make it a little vague, and it'll get more. The tough thing is, to be honest with you, is going back and remembering what I wrote. I do have my notes and everything, but there are certain things, like you pointed out with the sheriff and the marshal. You do make those mistakes occasionally, and sometimes your proofreader or your editor doesn't catch them.
Right.
And I've got a very good editor who I used to work with. She used to work at the LA Times, and was a book editor there, and it's a good friend of mine. But she'll catch things that I don't, and occasionally she doesn't.
But that's stuff that if you don't know, if you're not real familiar with the differences, you would make that mistake.
Right.
Because in TV, the TV westerns, the town was always the town sheriff.
Right.
And when in reality, it was a marshal.
Or in some cases.
City marshal or city police.
Or the chief of police.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which is in the Santa Fe affair. That's what I went there. Yeah.
Sheriff was the county.
Right.
Yeah.
The town in the Santa Fe affair was a real town. And I actually found the graveyard. Records of the graveyard,
Oh, cool.
And I had to recreate everything for the book and into some detail. And obviously, you don't know everything that took place in a small town like that. But it's not far from Santa Fe. But it's... I actually... A couple of the names of some of the townspeople I borrowed from the graveyard.
I don't think they're going to mind.
No, I don't think so either. No.
Well, Bobby, would you like to ask Bob the question? Seems though he's been here long enough, he knows what it is.
I would love to ask the question. So, Bob, tell us about writer's block. Do you get it?
No.
Do you not get it? What do you think?
Never do. I can honestly say, and I thought about my answer to this, because I've heard you guys ask the question so many times. And to me, writer's block is lack of focus. And it means basically it happens when you have a lot of other things going. And I won't start writing a book unless I got a clear head and I have the time to sit down and write. And because I get it, if I start writing a story and it, like Lancer, I might spend 3 or 4 hours writing in one morning, and the next day I'll get up and do the same thing. And I prefer writing in the morning, but not all the time can I do that, mainly because of my work schedule. But I find I never have had writer's block, because when I sit down to write, I'm focused, mm-hmm. you know. And I think people get writer, and I'm not saying everybody, but I think that focus is one of the most important things I think we have in life. And it's just, you know, I've always believed that, whether you're playing baseball or whatever. And matter of fact, real quick story, that Sid Thrift was a friend of mine who used to be the general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And we talked one time, and I said, you know, I think Major League Baseball, when you're hitting a baseball, it's 90% focus and 10% bat speed. And he said, you're exactly right. And that's what we used to teach at the Kansas City Royals Academy. Because it's like... they used to teach, if you're right-handed, take batting practice left-handed when you're in a slump, because it refocuses your eyes and your mind. And when I go out and play golf, I go to the driving range. I carry a couple of left-handed clubs, and I hit most of mine right-handed, and if I'm in a slump, I'll hit some left-handed. It just refocuses you, and it's amazing what it does, and I'm surprised more people don't do it. But Vijay Singh will go out and hit 50 golf balls the opposite way. And so it's all about focus. And I really believe that if you have writer's block, it's because you have other stuff going on and you've lost your focus on the book that you're writing, or the story you're writing, or the character you're writing, or the paper or whatever you're writing. It's just a lack of focus.
It seems to me that your news writing background really puts you in that position, because you probably were on a lot of deadlines.
Yeah,
you had to get some points across really quickly, mm-hmm. and so that gave you that focus. You had to have it there. So mm-hmm. maybe you carry that over into your.
I think you're right. Usually, most of the stuff we do, if it doesn't have sound in it, it's going to be 40 seconds. And you have to tell the 5 W's, plus tell an interesting and entertaining story to keep the listener engaged, all in 40 seconds.
Right.
And it's a skill. And if you're doing it for the network, you got to do it in 35 seconds, which is even tighter. And so you don't have a lot of time to get stuff in, but you learn to economize words and economize phrases. And you look at it and say, okay, it's 44 seconds. You know, I can really take out those two lines. And a lot of times I'll do a 44-second piece and have to be down to 35, and I'll blade edit, you know, to a breath and just mm-hmm. tighten it up, or redo it, one of the two. From the time I get my editors like me, because if they assign me a story, they usually know that if they give it to me at 20 to the hour, I'll have it for them ready and recorded by the top of the hour.
There you go.
And
what are they doing in there?
They are having a great time.
They are having a great time.
I have a question for Russ. Do you know what the 5 W's are?
Who, what, where, why, when, and...
Oh, who, what, when, where, why.
Hoping you didn't know that.
You know, it's funny you should say you don't get writer's block.
Myself every morning.
We interviewed John Sanford the Thursday before the Cowboy Festival. Mm-hmm. And we asked John Sanford this very same question. And his answer, remember what his answer was, Bobby?
Well, he really doesn't get it, but he did say that if you ever find yourself at an impasse, just introduce a character with a gun.
Bring in a guy with
room.
A gun. That's the title, incidentally. That's the title of my next book, because I'm going to write one about all of these shows.
Yeah. Do you remember we had someone on one time, and they were saying sometimes you write yourself into a corner, and he said, mm-hmm. so if you get stuck, all you do is you say... And then the murders began.
Yeah. I don't remember who that was, though. Yeah. We've had great answers.
For fun, last week, I actually went back and I was trying to find exactly the answers that we've had. And I was listening to Claire Fullerton, and when we asked the question, she said, absolutely not, never. I don't know. It's a myth. It just doesn't exist. Writers are writing all the time. Our minds are bubbling things around, and we just need to pull out of there what we need. And she was like so firm. It was really fun to listen to that little segment of that show.
Let's see what her answer is this time. She's on, which is on what?
I know.
Two months?
I don't know.
August, I think. Claire's back on the show.
She just books her. So.
Yeah, she doesn't know. She's booked.
I write
it's
it
done.
On paper, them, Dano. Or put it in the computer, and it's done.
Well, it I, real
August,
quick, I
remember the week.
I appreciate your stories. I really do. I they're fun
Thank
to
you.
Read.
Thank you.
And I think they're far different from mine. Not near as bloody.
True.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, and what I tell people too is that with Lancer, it's a triple thing. He uses his brains first, his brawn second, and if he has to use the gun, he does. That's why every mm-hmm. cover has a gun with bullets, but no
holster. No gun in the holster.
No gun in the holster.
Right.
It's always a last resort, and if he uses it, you're dead, so it doesn't really matter.
There you go. We're running out of time. Bob, why don't you tell everybody where they can find these books, your email, your websites, your blogs?
Go to bobbrillbooks.com. That's the easiest place. You can also go to Lancer Hero of the West to read the blog, also the Facebook page, and I'm asking readers to go there. You can read the latest blog, and they can find out how they can contribute to the New Orleans affair, because I want some readers to give me help me write it, and just, you know, I may not use it, but please, you know, read the blog, LancerHeroOfTheWest.com. Just Google that, all that stuff will come up, and you'll be fine. You can email me at BrillPro@gmail.com.
Maybe I'll just throw in one of my maybe I'll send you one of my Cajun characters, and he could be a sidekick.
There you go.
I like it.
All right.
Cool. Next week, we have Ed Willett, who will be with us on via phone. And that's another marathon book there, Bobby, 408 pages.
Yes, I know.
Sorry, Bobby. I didn't know.
The following week, we have a return visit with Phil Donnelly, who was a Michigander, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Eileen Cook is on the 19th, and then Kelsey Barthel is 26th. And what? Oh, that's right. It switched.
You didn't take it out like I told
I didn't.
You. It's Tosca.
Tosca is on the 26th.
Yes.
Okay. He's a... yeah.
She. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, somebody will be here. She's a Canuck, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. She's actually one of Mickey's
clients. She's one of Mickey's, yes.
Okay. Anyway, that pretty much shoots it in the butt for us. And did I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Jerry's having a heart. Yeah. Anyway, Bob will be back with us next week, sitting here, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Well, bright-eyed and tailed.
I get off at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Russ will be back next month.
Yes, sir.
On the 26th.
Yes.
With Mickey's person.
Tosca.
Mickey's person.
Tosca. And Bobby Jean, of course, will be back next week.
Good.
And I will be back next week. And that's it for us at the Old Writer's Block for Bob Brill and Russ Avison, Jerry Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell. Have a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us. And this means we are out of here.